Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers. We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show.
Hello, hello.
How are we all doing today?
You know, it's been a day, but I'm happy to be here with y'all.
Are you going to be happy to hear this breaking news update?
No, because I know what the news is, and I'm not happy.
That's right. The Shedd Aquarium's vote has concluded. They have named their adorable baby beluga Opus.
Cowards.
Opus.
Lucas. Lucas. Come on. These people have failed me.
I think this is good news. I see the glass half full. This means that we get to keep our small, independent, scrappy podcast cred.
Yeah.
Basically, nothing is our fault.
This is true. Nothing is our fault.
Because if we had the power to exert to name a baby beluga Lucas, that means we would have responsibility for something.
Belugas.
I find this liberating, actually.
Yes, I'm, the freedom we have.
I'm glad that, he's named Opus.
That we can say whatever we want and no one can judge us for it.
Because we have no power.
We have no power. No power at all.
Even though 2 weeks ago we talked about a higher power. That's different.
Did.
It's not the
it's
same
different.
Thing.
Higher it's power just a name. Is not more power. It's not power. It's
power.
Power. I did have the weird experience today where I had to, I guess, come out about my podcasting experiences. I had to come out in public that I podcast because this person I know knows someone at Spotify that can get our podcast on Spotify. I'm like, you can get your podcast on Spotify. This is not hard. I can tell you right now how to do it.
You've got 5 stars on Spotify.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it did mean I had to out myself. And I was like, fuck.
As someone who knows what RSS is.
Yes. I was like, well, I know this because I podcast, and we're going to leave it there. I'm not going to tell you what any of them are, where you can find them. Well, you can find them on Spotify, but I'm not going to tell you what they are. Specifically one we made for 7 years a few years ago. Not going to tell you about that one.
You go some places on this one, too.
I do. I can't. I go some places on all of them. I'm really not allowed to tell people in my real life about them. Even the throwback bound. All the things about the Leatherman. I don't.
Anyway, we are here to talk about episode 2 of the second season of SeaQuest, The Fear That Follows.
Dun dun dun.
This is written by new supervising producer Clifton Campbell. He was previously a writer on 21 Jump Street, if you can believe it. He created the Bill and Ted TV show.
Oh.
And after this, he went on to create a cop show called The Glades for A&E.
That's weird. I can't hear The Glades without thinking of Arrow.
Of course. Of course. That had a lot of cops in it.
It did have a lot of cops, but I think of that as The Glades.
And this one is directed by Robert Wiemer, who directed 6 episodes of Superboy, another program that filmed in Central Florida, and 8 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah. I've seen one of those.
You've probably seen all 8 of them.
But I haven't seen Superboy. I don't know what that is. I've never heard of it before.
Well, it's about this boy, and let me tell you, he's pretty super.
Is he super? Does he grow up to be a man? Does he grow up to be Superman?
They got canceled.
before he could get there?
Stacey Haiduk, who played Hitchcock, has a major role on the Superboy show.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah. Is she Superwoman?
She is not. She's Lana Lang.
Oh.
Yeah. Ah.
I don't know why you say this like I should know it.
She's Lana Lang. God.
Jesus. Don't you call yourself a podcaster.
Gotta know about Lana Lang.
This random other show from the 90s. Whatever.
You gotta watch this clip of Gilbert Gottfried tying up Superman on the beach. Gosh. Excuse me, Super Boy. He's a boy. He's a little boy.
I really don't. I don't have to do that.
I mean, while we're talking about Central Florida Productions, that one was filmed at Disney's Hollywood Studios. In their studios, back when they had studios.
Back when they had studios.
Excuse me, I guess it was Disney MGM Studios.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yes, what I keep defaulting to, and I have to stop myself every time I talk. I'm like, Hollywood. Hollywood.
So this one starts at an undersea base.
Yes, the UEO tracking station.
And this station is run by a anal little man.
Yes.
He is a rigorous rule follower. He's a...
Clenches too much.
He's a petty tyrant of a military officer, and he demands they send out their spinny pulsy drone.
Because there's like some phantom signal coming in. And yeah, so they send out this drone that is apparently like against the rules to send out without permissions. And it is like, kind of looks like a fidget spinner that lights up.
Uh-huh.
Or like.
And it's got cables coming off of all the lobes.
Or a fancy underwater Roomba. Yeah. It is just like a light-up frisbee. It's weird.
And as it goes down, it either is or finds a light bubble. I'm not entirely sure on this light bubble we
see. I thought they found it.
Okay, that makes sense,
too. I thought that the light bubble is where this phantom signal is coming from. Uh-huh. It kind of looks like a snot blob.
It does. It really does.
And it's moving around. And somehow... Wiggling. It's making a noise, mm-hmm. and the people at the base are like, that's weird. If I didn't know better, it was trying to talk to Sequest. And I'm like, how do you know that?
What do you mean by that?
What?
Because
it's making just a weird echo, and it's a blob.
And so our lieutenant says, that's exactly right. This proves that there is a spy aboard Sequest. They're doing treason.
What? I feel like we cut a few scenes to, like, have all this happen within 4 minutes. And I don't know how we got here. But this dude is convinced, and he takes it to, like, you know, the general above him.
Mm-hmm.
And is like, yeah, you can't punish me for sending out that drone because there's treason going on.
Yeah,
and he's like, you know what? You're right. So they send a SWAT team to the Sequest.
Yes.
And SWAT the Sequest in the middle of the night and, like, rush.
And this works. You know, they board the ship unimpeded. I got, you know, like, Crocker's not there. Crocker would have stopped this.
Somehow we get surprise launches docking and getting on board without anyone knowing until all these men are running on board with guns.
Mm-hmm,
and then they are running to the moon pool, which is where, like, Bridger and everyone else is also running to. Like, what are you doing on my boat? As they cock their guns at Darwin.
They arrest Darwin. Darwin is arrested. There are four men with, like, military rifles trained on Darwin the dolphin. This is very serious. This is a serious moment. It's not ridiculous in the least.
Like, that escalated really fast. What the fuck happened?
It looks like the Elian Gonzalez photograph, but it's a dolphin. It's an animatronic pretend dolphin.
This entire sequence is like 4 minutes long from the start to here. Like, maybe not even 3 minutes, maybe. What?
So then we get, for the first time this season, the theme song, and the opening has changed.
Well, yes.
They've added all the new cast doing action things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just ocean stuff. It's like, there's Tony Piccolo, there's Lucas, mm-hmm. there's Dr. Smith, there's Captain Bridger.
We don't get the cool voiceover anymore.
And no cool voiceover. What's beneath the surface? I don't know.
Apparently snot blobs. And treasonous dolphins.
Treasonous dolphins. So we rejoin the action on land.
where Lucas and Tony and Dagwood were out on shore leave getting dinner, and Lucas is so pumped to be driving a car.
Getting dinner at a paella joint that Tony Piccolo knows about, yes. And Lucas really enjoyed.
It was delicious.
And Sequest predicted in-dash GPS navigation.
Yes, they did.
There you go.
They did, because Tony and Lucas are, like, struggling with it working. They're like, it shouldn't, you know, shouldn't be out. The GPS is never out. Try the internet. And that's not working. And Tony, like, pulls out map discs. And Lucas is like, ugh, those went out of style, like, at the same time leather seats did. Like, these are dumb. And while they're having this conversation, Dagwood's in the back drawing squiggles on placemats?
Yes, from the paella joint. Like, how are these placemats not covered in like seafood juices?
He took the new stack.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah,
very good.
Yeah.
And he's showing off his doodles and they're like, hey, cool, what is it? And he's like, I don't know, it's doodles. Doodles don't have to be things. You're right, Dagwood. Dang it, yeah, you're right.
You're right. It's nice that he can just draw and not, like, it doesn't have to be like, let's play tic-tac-toe 20 times. I have trauma from placemats with children.
Draw me a fish. Draw me another fish. Draw me another fish.
Draw me.
Angelina, draw me another fish.
50 fucking fish.
I want so many fish.
And now let's play tic-tac-toe forever.
On top of
and have
fish.
Absolutely no knowledge of strategy. I can't lose harder. I'm giving it my all, kid. You really gotta meet me halfway and pick a good square. There's a point where I can't not win.
So what do you think about Lucas Piccolo and Big D Dagwood being immediately the best of friends? Episode 2, we're skipping the, like, moment where they gel. We're just there. Go with it.
You know, it would be nice to see that journey, but it's nice to know that they've come together.
Yeah.
That they're like, you know what? Yes, we're going to do this. We're the outcasts. We're the young ones of the group.
It's like they realize they have Star Trek Lower Decks before Star Trek Lower Decks.
Yes. Yeah. We are the bottom of the bottom. Let's go hang.
Yeah. I mean, it really gets across that Tony Piccolo is a guy that gets along with everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and what I kind of like,
because without him, I don't think Dagwood and Lucas would be fast friends, and not instantly fast friends for sure.
Though I could also, like, see Dagwood being the thing that brings them together. In the sense that they both, like, you know, because Lucas is very sweet.
Yes.
So I could see him, like, seeking Dagwood out and, you know, talks with him. Like, oh, you know, sit with me for lunch. You're wandering around, whatever. But, like, and then, like, Tony's over there with Dagwood, too. As we know, after the baby, he's like,
yes.
Yeah, dude.
Yes.
I could see Dagwood being the one that's like, friends.
Yeah.
Together. And they're like,
okay. I know this paella place. All
okay.
Right. Yeah.
Well, we're roommates anyways. Might as well.
It's true. They don't need to be brought together. The captain brought them together. Yeah,
this is true. This is true. So, be my new Krieg gang.
Krieg gang. Sad. No.
Well, they are fighting over trying to get this GPS to work because they don't know where they are. They can't, like, you know, none of it's working. Who knows how to drive without a map?
Not in 2019, we don't.
True. Not very far. Actually, no, I did because my phone was too old to hook up to our car. And so the map never worked. So I did have to know how to get myself around in 2019. Now I have a better phone and
there
I just follow the GPS. Mostly to know where the stop signs are. Sometimes they're hidden behind trees. It's nice that it tells me there's a stop sign.
Sure. So this is interrupted when they nearly run over an elderly man standing in the middle of the road.
Yes.
Things in this episode are just happening.
Yes. Lucas stops the car in time and they get out and they're like, hey, dude, are you okay? Like, we're miles from the closest town. What's he doing out here? And I was like, you guys are on a paved road. I'm sure there are houses.
See, yes, this is an elderly Native American man standing in the middle of the road looking up at the sky, hair in twin braids, the whole, like, you get it, right?
Uh-huh.
You get it.
Yeah, yeah, very stereotypical.
He's not in traditional dress yet.
No, but he has, like, Native American embroidered designs on his clothes.
That's true, that's
true. Right? Like, it's... It screams. And so as Lucas is like trying to be like, hey, are you okay? They are interrupted by the power going out in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And it like going out and then turning back on. And then suddenly the car phone is ringing. And so like they run back to the car. And it is Bridger who's like, I've been trying to get in touch with you for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you?
Darwin's been arrested.
And then they look up, and the old dude is gone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What's it mean? He's really fast.
He's so fast, you guys.
Yeah. He just sprinted. So we go to where Darwin is being held in Dolphin Prison.
Dolphin Jail. Please, darling, please describe Dolphin Jail.
Dolphin Jail is a small pool that's illuminated in the middle of a really, really, really pitch black warehouse with about like 20 dudes with machine guns standing guard and like a spotlight on the pool.
So Sequest was filmed in Florida on 4 sound stages.
Yeah, this was a sound stage.
Two for the standing sets of the Sequest and 2 swinging for, you know, the sets of the week.
Mm-hmm.
They used one just for this. It's like,
I love that they're just like, we're just going to turn off all the lights and put in a very tiny little pool.
It's smaller than your off-the-rack, above-ground backyard pool.
It looks like a little, like, fish pond.
Yeah, thank goodness Darwin is an animatronic. If they used a live dolphin for this character, this would be the cruelest thing.
Well,
you know, so would the tubes, frankly.
And the first thing that, like, Lucas points out is, like, you can't just stick him anywhere. He's gonna get sick. And I'm like, yes, he will, because, like, I don't think it's deep enough for him to swim anywhere.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Bridger and Lucas are there, and they're trying to talk to Darwin because this lieutenant dude and this general are like, he's sending signals to someone and he can't be released until we know who.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're trying to be like, Darwin, are you like sending signals? But Darwin, tight-lipped, he ain't no.
It's Shut the Fuck Up Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to think of
Stool Pigeon.
Not the one.
Snitch.
Yes, but all I kept thinking was Skank.
Darwin ain't no Skank. Now he will skank. He's a bit of a rude boy.
Yeah.
Darwin knows how to pick it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's all my brain. Like, Darwin's no skank. That's not it. It's not skank. Skank is the wrong one.
Tony Piccolo.
He's a skank.
That's a skank. Said with love.
Skank gang.
No, I don't think that one has legs.
No.
Like Darwin.
Like Darwin. That's why he can't be a skank. Okay. So Darwin's like, I ain't talking. And so Lucas is like, hey, Captain, maybe if there were less people around, Darwin would talk. And so Bridger's like, why don't you guys give us some space? And the security dude is like, I don't know about that. Like, not gonna do that. And Bridger's like, we're not gonna sneak him a flounder with a file in it.
What if they did, though?
Right?
Better episode.
Or like, here, go ahead, break yourself out. Here's a bomb, Darwin.
Yes, yes.
And the security guy's like, oh, do you think, you know, national security is funny? And Bridger's like, yeah, actually, I do. Like, this is pretty ridiculous. You have arrested...
You arrested a dolphin.
Dolphin.
How do you not feel so dumb right now?
He doesn't have thumbs.
Treason. Darwin cannot commit treason. He's not a citizen. He's a dolphin.
True. They do give them some space. Mm-hmm. And Darwin, lips are loose now. He's like, hey, remember those aliens From back when?
Well, he doesn't say aliens. He talks about, like, visitors, returning, cooperation. He's talking around it.
Mm-hmm.
And Lucas is like, oh, yeah, the fucking aliens.
Yeah,
that's right.
Alien. And Bridger's like, fuck, I never told them about the aliens. This is bad.
What, once they figure out that that's where the signals are going, like, Darwin is communicating with the aliens from such great patience, Lucas says, quote, Captain, that would explain the internet going down. How?
Does it?
Why? Do aliens hate the internet? That didn't happen last time.
You know what? Anytime our power goes out, I'm just going to go like, you know what?
It's the aliens. The aliens are talking to Darwin.
Definitely the aliens.
Things just happen and people just say things in this episode.
I am going to now start saying that when I don't want to be on camera on Zoom.
Darwin's talking to
the aliens. I'm like, my camera's not working. It's the aliens.
Not to skip to the end, but I wonder if this episode was conceived as a two-parter and then produced as a single-parter.
Yes. That would explain so much about the pacing of this episode.
Things just happen, and they happen so hard.
Bridger goes to this general dude, mm-hmm. and as they are going down a moving walkway through an aquarium tunnel.
Yes!
Which is very cool.
It's very cool.
He's like, yeah, so aliens. And the general's like, well, what do they want? He's like, I don't know, but we could ask them when they get here.
Mm-hmm.
Conversation. It goes a long way.
And the general doesn't have time for this. He has tickets to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. He has to see his beloved Caps play back in Washington.
And he's like, but there's aliens. And he's like, but it's the playoffs. And I'm like, you know, if the Red Wings were suddenly in the playoffs again,
mm-hmm.
I would be this dedicated as well.
This means, if we are still in Sequest 2019, these events are about to transpire on June the 19th.
Mm.
That is the day that Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals were played. St. Louis beat the Bruins, actually. Mm. Thank you very much.
I'm still holding out. One day. One day, like, I'll be there, and the person next to me will, like, throw an octopus, and I'll be like, yeah!
You can throw that octopus.
I can throw the
you
octopus.
You can throw an octopus.
I don't want to have to smuggle in the octopus.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
I guess I could get a really tiny one.
A little bit of octopus.
A little baby one that's, like, smaller than my hand.
You could just keep it in your mouth.
That wouldn't be so hard to smuggle in. Some of these ones that the people bring, they are so big.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, where are you putting that?
Rectum.
I know.
Well, you asked.
It was rhetorical.
So you don't want to tell people at work you make podcasts?
No. I don't. Because you know why? I want to say the dirty things.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, yeah. The general dude is like, yo, I want my dude to be in charge of your security. And Bridger's like, he's a jerk. And he's like, yeah, but I want him. And he's like, well, fine, then I want my dolphin.
Mm-hmm,
you can have your jerk if I get my dolphin. And they're like, fine.
Fine.
So then Scott joins us.
Scott Keller?
Space Dad.
Space Dad.
He is back.
Welcome back to the show, Kent McCord.
They have caught him up on the goings-ons.
And no one catches anyone else up on him. He doesn't get an introduction. He just sort of appears.
He just appears, and everyone's fine with it.
Yes. There's a lot of new cast who have not met this man before.
Mm-hmm.
Lonnie Henderson is in 30 seconds of this episode, but like Dr. Smith.
Yeah.
Maybe someone who needs to be introduced to their scientific expert on this mission.
No.
No. Okay.
No, it's fine. It happened off screen. It's fine.
Things just happen.
So they got a plan that they're like, you know, going to signal these aliens and mm-hmm, they're going to send them to this area that they're evacuating under the lie that they're investigating a spill. And
just like an Annihilation. This predicted annihilation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It'll work great, because then they'll come there, and then they'll, like, take them to another secure location, and mm-hmm. it'll be fine, and it won't scare anyone. And the security dude is like, but what are we gonna do about this clip of them, you know, zapping people away?
That's really the one bit of, like, hey, remember this in the whole episode. There's no, like, previously on to talk about such great patience. It's just this one clip of the wrist laser.
Well, there's a couple clips before they get to that in this scene that is from that episode.
Sure,
but the
sure.
security guy only cares about, hey, were you going to show everyone this one?
Yeah.
This is the important one.
The wrist laser. They don't say, well, actually, it was more of a wrist teleporter. We got everybody. They just say, well, it caused no permanent damage that we could tell. It's fine.
I'm like, you should point out that it was just a teleporter. Like, it's not that serious, especially when this dude is like, well, it sounds like if you're not worried about this, you were brainwashed. It's like, no, it was just a teleporter.
Mm-hmm.
We're all fine.
We're all fine.
Everyone came back. But he is, you know, no nonsense, means business. He's like, I also want Piccolo and Dagwood off the boat.
He's like 5 foot four and wants to make it your problem.
He reminds me of the dude, the Mr. Potato Man from Pride and Prejudice. Mr. Collins.
Mr. Collins.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who's also the dude in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, and I don't remember what he's called there. But that dude, tiny dude.
Yes.
Potato Man. He's the version of that. That you're like, you're small and you gotta stick up your ass and no one takes you seriously.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Potato Man.
He's Mr. Collins is Potato Man.
Yes, he has the line about the potatoes at dinner. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yes, this guy is ordering their classified technology Dagwood and their
criminal
and their convicted criminal Piccolo off the boat.
He's only not ordering Lucas off because Lucas has never been convicted. He has committed a lot of crimes.
But much like Lucas, Bridger is immediately and entirely backing these DeLuise boys. He won't have it. It does happen anyway over his objections,
yes.
But he does make objections.
Yes. And so Ford has to oversee them leaving the boat.
And another line that I have no idea what it means. Piccolo says, quote, I got more in common with these aliens than anybody. How? What do you mean by that?
Maybe he's talking about his gills and the fact that he's that somehow makes him like less human.
Yeah, maybe. I'd like him to say something. Inexplicable.
It's weird.
I want a follow-up.
Yeah. It would make more sense if he said it about him and Dagwood, in the sense that, you know, Dagwood is...
Dagwood is, according to the episode Daggers, a non-human intelligence.
Yes. Yeah, there we go. So, like, it would make more sense if he was, like, lumping them together, and then you could, like, assume the two of them are different than everyone else because he also has his gills. But doing it just about himself is a little weird, especially next to Dagwood. Seems like maybe there was another scene that should have existed.
Isn't Darwin classified technology? Or at least the dolphin phone? But then they need the dolphin phone.
We've stopped keeping that a secret from anyone.
That's true.
Like,
I guess the secret went out the window in Last Lap at Luxury when Lucas is doing a Q&A about it with all the world leaders.
Yeah, you know, between him and like Tesloff.
Yeah.
And like I'm like, everyone knows. Everyone fucking knows at this point.
Teslov is in prison in The Hague. Like, hey, man, I saw some wild shit on a submarine. You're not going to believe this.
I'm not going to believe it. Yeah, so they're like, whatever. It's fine. They're heading off the boat, but then Dagwood's like, oh, wait, my drawings, and wants to go back for them. And Ford's like, you can't. You got to go. I'll keep them safe for you. Go, go, go.
And he does.
So over in the moon pool, we got Scott, we got Lucas, we got Wendy, and Darwin. They are getting ready to send the communication out. But they're like, oh man, look at this weird rash on Darwin. One night in jail, and he got a tattoo. And Lucas is like, and everyone thought it would be me. This isn't fair.
It's this weird little bit of discoloration. Dr. Smith is keeping an eye on it as an infection. Will this be important? Sort of.
A little bit. I just like think of it. I was like, oh, did he get a tummy tattoo?
He got a tummy tattoo.
Can Darwin not have babies now?
like Moki's tummy tattoo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That jail is fucked up. So they hold a communicator out to Darwin.
They give Darwin the phone.
So he can communicate to the aliens and then communicate back when they accept the coordinates.
So this is all being arranged. O'Neill is calling out progress on their arrival. Ortiz is calling out updates on the Rangers Capitals game.
Yes.
Because he's a big hockey head. You know those Cubans. They love hockey. So as soon as they're on their way to the rendezvous, the alien ship is already there. Whoa.
Yeah, because like Bridger's like, oh, what's their ETA? And O'Neill's like, 2 minutes ago?
And so they open the window and they see that the spaceship is a box.
Yes.
It's just a big rectangle.
It looks like an IKEA box for bookshelves.
Yeah, yeah. You're going to pop this open and assemble the real spaceship inside.
They're like, oh man, this is smaller than the last ship, but it's still really big. And I'm like, is it smaller than the last ship? That looks bigger than the last ship.
But it had a million further years of technological advancement. Whoa. That means it doesn't have to have curves.
And apparently it has a launch, because a launch comes over from it to the Sequest when the launch doors open.
This is Henderson's big scene. She moves the lever to open the launch door.
And on the other side is three aliens.
And
they backlit so fucking much.
And they do that thing where they want it in slow motion, but they don't have or don't think to use a high frame rate camera to get the shot. So they just play it back slower and it's really jittery. And I hate that so much.
I love that the one actor definitely almost tripped on the stairs and was having to like hold the wall as they came down the stairs.
One of these aliens is played by Karen Malkus, back from Such Great Patients. For the rest of this episode, we are going to see three of the same alien design as that hologram. And one of the actors is the same lady.
I think it's the middle one. I think it's the one
the one who gets the special hat?
Yes.
Yes, I think you're right.
The face looks... Because they do have like slightly different faces because of the makeup and because you're putting on different actors. And I'm pretty sure it's the main one that does all the speaking. Yeah. Spoilers. They got this nifty like crown
that
allows them to speak in English.
It is a
crown translator.
A tiara of plastic tubing.
Yes, that glows.
That comes out of their skin satchel? One of them has a shoulder bag that looks like it is made of their skin.
I love it so much. I love the skin satchel. I'm like, why does it look exactly like their skin? And, like, they go to, like, take this thing out. And, of course, like, Mr. Potato Man is like, oh, I got my gun on you. Give that to me. And they just... burn his gun, so he has to drop it.
Before the head alien puts on their translating hat, there's a bit of just Lucas staring at one of them, and like, this is a weird time for Lucas to have a new crush.
Anytime there's a girl.
Is that a girl? I mean, we find out later, the answer is yes and no.
He's like, close enough. I'm not picky at this point.
It's definitely naked, so if I believe it's a girl... I've seen a girl naked.
I'm open. You know, I'm young. It's a time for experimentation.
How confused do you think these aliens are? A million years ago, their ancestors sent contact here to talk to dolphins. Recently, they got a response in the language of dolphins. They come on here. These people got feet. These aren't dolphins. What's this?
Probably very confused.
It's a good thing I have my translating hat.
So Bridger welcomes them, and Brody makes this snide comment to, like, Lucas that's like, oh man, you know, you think after all this time they would have picked up a few Earth words. And so what I love is when they put on this, like, translator crown, immediately the alien, like, sasses him of, like... we did pick up a few words.
Mm-hmm.
Take that. I could annihilate you right now.
So there is this tense standoff where these aliens have come for reasons only known to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We've only talked about coordinates, not about, like, intentions.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of that being the first question, it's just like, all right, here's how it's going to go. We got to inject you with this. We got to scan you for that. We're going to do a big Q&A. Like, wow, really rolling out the red carpet here, huh? What is this?
Mm-hmm. Well, and then what I love is Scott's like, I'm going to take a sea crab over to look at their cockpit without asking.
He's planning to trespass right in front of them. They're in the room.
Ask. Because you know what? I bet they'll say, yeah, go ahead, Space Dad. It's fine. And he says this in front of them. Like, the lead alien looks at him like, what the fuck, dude?
Like, really? Really, dude? I'm right here. Also, they do have their laser bracelets, but I will say, these do not look as cool as the previous laser bracelet prop.
No, they're not. But those
are
removed.
It's very meshy, like a mesh grid.
It is. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of those, like, futuristic casts that you see, like, that are out now, where they, like, put the, they fill it up?
They fill up the cast?
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you seen those?
No.
Oh, well, the way you were like, oh, yeah, it sounded like, so, like, there's these, it's like, kind of looks like a mesh, like the mesh crisscross design, right?
Sure.
Okay, but it's, like, plastic, and then it gets filled with, like, once you put that sleeve on, let's say, it gets filled with a goo that then, like, hardens and forms, but it's, like, a more flexible, breathable cast option,
right,
is the idea.
And this is for, like, broken limbs and such.
Yeah.
Yes, like a plaster cast, but the next generation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But it's kind of like a fencing thing. I don't know. I've seen them. I don't. I'm surprised you haven't seen them.
I have not seen them.
They take them to their new secure location.
Yes.
And it's on land, and they're going to a marine research place.
I love how disoriented these aliens are when they get out of the car in, like, the parking lot.
When they get out of, like, the fucking Hummer.
They're just like, what is this?
Whoa, what?
Where is this?
What? Where's the water? Like, what?
What?
It's so bright. And what I love is, like, Bridger and others arrive in this really futuristic, like, car that opens, you know, with the weird, like, the doors go up.
In the 2019 of the UEO, there are only Gullwing.
Yes.
That's the only doors we got.
Yeah, but then the aliens have to ride in the Hummer.
Yeah, well, it's what fits their big heads.
Yeah. So give them a convertible.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Let them feel the wind in their hair.
Well, there's a problem with that.
There's no hair.
There you go.
Yeah. Give them wigs.
Give them wigs. When will you wear wigs?
So they take them to this marine research place that it just looks like the most corporate conference center.
I wish I knew which, like, yeah, conference hotel in Central Florida this was.
Yes. And so they lead them in, and through a security feed, we see one of them, like, wander away from the group almost onto an elevator, and Lucas has to, like, save him. Like, no, 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 come back!
No. I wish these were goofy little guys. They're not. But I wish they were goofy little guys who just, like, kept getting confused by Earth things. That'd be fun. The security lieutenant and Ford have been paired off and are taking care of everything. Ford is, you know, Bridger's eyes and voice in this whole thing. And they have a conversation about how to control the situation.
Ford's like, you know, you could stop being an asshole to them. This really isn't making them feel welcome. And the other guy's like, I want them to feel fear.
There isn't a creature in this universe whose heart isn't driven by fear. This is his point of view. There we go. Now we're learning things.
Mm-hmm. Wendy is doing doctor stuff, which
full body CT scans.
Uh-huh. that is like, oh man, look at its beautiful heart. I love this heart.
One of them is on a scanning bed. Two of them are doing like a treadmill stress test.
Yes.
And they're apparently loving it.
They're having the best time.
Aliens love treadmills. It's their favorite thing.
Like, this is great! Running!
So Bridger and Dr. Smith are talking about their perfect, perfect bodies. Their perfect, sexless bodies.
So they have both male and female reproductive organs inside, and they're like, oh, where's the fun in that?
So, like, the idea is they, shall we say, take care of things themselves. There's no need for a friend, a partner, when it's baby time.
I wish Lucas was around to be like, oh, man.
Although.
But are you still open?
Yeah.
It's up.
Like,
yeah?
Like, literally, is there an opening?
We could still have some fun. We can make this work.
Yeah. You don't need to, like, have a biological requirement. You just need to have nerve endings. Come on, baby.
Yeah, you still into that? Like, meh, meh.
So eventually, they start asking these aliens questions.
Yes. Oh my god, they have like, they couldn't even give them chairs. They have, the three aliens have to share a bench seat as all the officers are like at a board table.
You think if such great patience didn't end with forming a conspiracy, the UEO wouldn't be caught on the back foot and they could have had a fucking chair?
Like, come on. And so they're also just like asking them a bajillion questions without giving them any time to answer. Wendy is rude and tries to read their minds without permission.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, this backfires. They apparently have some mental defenses and don't appreciate the probing as she starts to cry.
Yeah, and, like, no one can, like, snap her out of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Lucas is like, it's okay. It's just what she does. I was like, it's not okay.
It's not.
Ford's like, hey, ask! Oh my god, all everyone, come, where is everyone's manners?
So we learn that despite the pleading of one of the UEO's political leaders leading this panel, the aliens are here to perform research and not here to hand out their interstellar technology.
Mm-hmm. Who knew? Shocking.
No one knew. They
well,
didn't
no,
ask.
But like, you can guess. Like, mm-hmm, they're not here to just be like, hey, here's everything we know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's never how it goes.
This room has giant aquarium tanks behind the panel. This show must have filmed in every aquarium in Central Florida.
Yeah. And so the aliens are like, hey, why won't you let us leave this base? And they're like, oh, because you'll cause mass panic. And they're like, panic? What the fuck's that? I'm like, well, you know, people are afraid. And they look at Lucas and like, Lucas, you're not afraid.
This is actually directly following on a thing from Such Great Patience that the new generation is open to extraterrestrial contact.
Yes. After they leave this room, Bridger is chatting with the general on like a pier. And behind them is like the aliens with like Lucas and Ford and Wendy. And they're just chatting.
I love to see these suits in sunlight. It is right? So rare to have like a show with like full head to toe prosthetic alien makeups and take them outside on a bright sunny day.
Yes. And so Bridger is talking to the general like, you're not planning to let them out. Like, you can't lie to them like this.
Mm-hmm,
and the general's like, well, two things. Like, they like Lucas, so he can be our leverage. And Bridger's like, fuck no. And also, like, if they don't tell us shit in the next 24 hours, they're not gonna leave the planet.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna keep them hostage. And I'm just like, dude, they are 5 feet away from you right now. Maybe now is not the time to say your evil plan.
Play ball or get stranded. Excuse me, sir. I'm wearing the translating hat. Sir?
I can hear you. He can hear you without his alien ears. Like, you are right here. There's no wall.
So the day ends, and the night comes, and we find Lucas fast asleep on the top of his bunk bed.
Mm-hmm. And an alien comes in and wakes him from his slumber.
Tell you what, not how I want to wake up.
No?
No. I think I would be very frightened. Very frightened.
If an alien was just, like, touching your face.
Yes! If anyone I didn't know was, like, in my bedroom and touching my face.
True. True. I mean, I was very afraid that one time that you, like, tried to sneak into the bedroom after I fell asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog thought you were an intruder.
Yes!
Don't sneak!
We're all in agreement. All three of us in this home. Yeah. Including a non-human intelligence. Yeah. So there you go.
She was like, I'm gonna bite your face off. And I'm like, I think she might, actually. She was very not into this. Don't sneak in the dark with your phone flashlight on.
I didn't want to wake you. I didn't want to turn on a light. I thought a light would wake you.
Other things woke me.
That's clear. So, the alien has found Lucas Wolinchek snug as a bug in his little beddy bye. And is like, hey, Lucas, come on. Come outside. I want to hang.
Lucas is like, okay, let me put on pants.
Lucas, come on. We're all going to go drink wine coolers. Lucas.
We're gonna steal a dinghy and take it to this cove, and we're going to go meet the guys and hang out on the beach.
Lucas, we're going to hit the shittiest weed you've ever seen. Come on, Lucas. Lucas, come on.
Lucas just wants to be included. He's like, yeah, this sounds great. Let's go. And they do. They take a dinghy to this cove, and they meet the others on the beach. He's like, hey guys, what's up? And meanwhile, while this is happening, they're getting, like, signals that the aliens are no longer on board, and mm-hmm, so they're tracking mm-hmm. them, and they're like, oh,
got
man.
Got those tracking injections, yeah,
they went
yeah.
to this cove. Come on, Brody. We gotta go.
So Brody and Ford roll up.
In the ugliest-ass future car I've ever
lime
seen.
Lime green future convertible.
It comes to a point.
It comes to a point at the nose.
Okay, so it's really pointy in the front. It's incredibly lime green.
Including the shoulder strap seatbelt?
Yes, yeah. And it's also like a convertible. But then from like the side, it makes me think of like play school toys. Right? Like the like play school, like, isn't it the play school like car where you like the kids like shuffle along?
Yeah,
in
sure.
It?
Yeah. Fred Flintstone yeah. style. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what the side, it's so fucking round in the back. I'm like, what is this?
It's the future. Thank you very much.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
So yes, Ford and Brody find Lucas and his alien friends
mm-hmm.
and are like, hey, what's going on here? And Lucas says, nothing. Everything is fine here. It's cool. We're all cool.
And they're like, wait, where's the other alien? There are three of you, and there's only two of you here. What's going on? And the aliens look at them like, mm-mm-mm, you noticed too much. And Ford and Brody kind of zone out, and then the aliens walk up to them and, like, phase into their bodies and take yes. their bodies over.
Yes, possession, alien possession! Ah!
And obviously Lucas is possessed by the other alien that's mm-hmm, not mm-hmm. there.
So it is time to investigate what happened when we come back from the commercial. And Scott Keller is poking around some scorch marks, talking about trace readings and saying like, oh, it looks like there is combustion and magnetics, which is weird because one requires oxygen and the other is literally the absence of oxygen. What? Did you just say that magnetics are literally the absence of oxygen?
Yes, he did.
Is that how you think magnets work? We're never getting to Mars.
No. See, this is him trying to throw them off the wormholes. But they know that they were there because that's the last place they had the signals. Because apparently once you, like, phase, the aliens phase into the human body, it, like, kills the signal of the little tracker they had put in them.
Sure, why not? Anything can happen. Things just happen.
Potato Man is like, very upset about all of this and is like, oh man, they abducted your men. They've gotten away. And Bridger's like, where did they go? You guys are guarding their ship at the bottom of the ocean. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, they have more. I bet they have stealth technology. They obviously have a whole fleet somewhere.
Mm-hmm. It stands to reason.
And so then we go to catch up on the boys / aliens who are having a joyride in the car.
I know where this is going. I've seen Earth Girls Are Easy. You can't fool me.
And they are being chased by a cop.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the cop pulls them over.
And so Ford, or the alien possessing Ford, is driving, hands over Ford's ID, and he scans like, ah, Commander, all right, I won't bust your chops for speeding, but I do gotta let you know that you can't be riding around out here. The ocean's 65 miles back that way.
I do like that, like, even possessed by aliens, Ford and Brody are like, Lucas, you don't get a drive.
So at some point in this plan, the wrist guns made it into the back seat of this lime green horrible car.
Yes.
How?
I don't know.
Wouldn't they be locked up? I mean, not that locks mean much to these aliens with their many capabilities. Sure, okay, fine, whatever. But my second question is, once the one cop gets wrist lasered and just is sucked into the stratosphere going by the special effect, how come his partner, Lady Cop, has no reaction whatsoever?
She just stands there and waits for her turn.
She just waits her turn to get lasered.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I noticed that too. Stands there and is like, oh. Because it takes like a really fucking long time because we have to watch it happen. And then they're like, ah, yes, you. Now it's your turn. And she's like, okay.
Okay. My mark is here. Got it. Great. Cool.
And now back on the Sequest. At some point, Someone found all of Dagwood's drawings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we're like, wow, this looks like the rash on Darwin. Go find Dagwood. And in this scene, Dagwood is now found and back on board. And they're like, hey, Dagwood, why are your drawings like this?
He's like, I don't know. It's drawings.
So much happens off screen.
Things just happen.
And so, yeah, he's just like, well, I don't know. I started drawing those when we went to dinner. And the highway got, or like the car got dark. That's all I know. And Wendy is just like, oh my God, they were communicating telepathically. Obviously.
So if it is a written communication, therefore it's a language. Therefore, we need to call Mr. Timothy O'Neill.
Yeah, and they're like, hey, do you recognize this? And he's like, well, kinda.
It looks sort of like this pictography of this certain band of pre-Columbian Native Americans.
Yeah, and they're like, do you know how to read it? And he's like, well, I'm not that lame.
And then he turns around to Dagwood and is like, wait, am I that lame?
Yeah, actually.
But Dagwood says, no, you're cool. You're a cool guy.
But then he's
I've seen your Friday underwear. You're a riot.
But then he's like, you know what? I know where you can find some lame people who would know how to read this.
There's a Seminole reservation nearby. You know, all Seminoles know their forebears, pre-Columbian pictography.
Obviously.
Not like there was any sort of major historical interruption. Perhaps a genocide?
No. They definitely know.
Never mind the millennia of, you know, sometimes things just get forgotten.
No, they definitely know. They definitely know.
But he's right. At least one does, because the camera brings us back to the old guy from the road.
Yes. That is where the boys / aliens show up.
Mm-hmm,
And the aliens phase out of their bodies. And they're all like, whoa, how'd we get here? And they look up. And there's a big ship in the sky.
Mm-hmm. So there are 6 Seminole reservations within the borders of the state of Florida. The Brighton Reservation is right along Lake Okeechobee and is indeed 64 miles inland by road.
Oh,
They accidentally got one, I think.
They actually like looked that up.
Maybe they did.
Interesting. Then a whole bunch of other Native Americans show up to bring things to this old dude.
They help Grandpa get put in his like traditional ceremonial dress.
Yes.
Covering him in various like shawls and accessories. And, yes. Yes.
And the rectangle in the sky puts down a teleport and starts zipping more aliens down.
They asked these guys so few questions. No one thought to ask, hey, are there more of you waiting in the car? Because the answer is yes. Yes, there were quite a few.
There's a lot of us, actually. And so Ford...
Not only are there a bunch of little guys, they have a tube.
Yes. Yes. This tube comes down. It's like Ford is trying to be like, okay, guys, let's make our escape. And Lucas is like, nah, they're not going to hurt us. I still got a chance with that one.
Wait, which one was it again? Oh, God damn it.
And so this big tube comes down.
Tube.
And as the tube is coming down, we cut to a helicopter that has Bridger and Scott and Potato Man flying into Florida O'Neill is giving them a history lesson.
A history lesson regarding one of Reagan's many crimes.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, his disavowal and rejection of treaties with the Seminole people and, Native Americans in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is part of a chain of events that leads to him not having, like, up-to-date location information inside his database. He has a fold-out paper map from AAA in his hand.
Yeah. He's like... They don't receive any funding, so we have no data. Here's my map.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which is an interesting concept. What is it, like a black spot? Like, I'm so like, how do you not have any, like, mapping?
I don't think the people on the ground have to pay the government to take pictures of them with spy satellites. You're the government.
Well, and what confuses me is it sounds like it's not that they have to pay, it's that the government isn't giving them any financial support, So we're not gonna spy on you. Which makes even less sense. Because if anything, that means we should spy on you more in government terms.
We're cutting IHS funding, and through some labyrinthine connection, that means you're not on Google Earth anymore. There's a clause somewhere, trust me.
And they're like, great! That sounds awesome, actually. Sure. If you're gonna do that, we might as well not be on Google Maps. Okay.
So...
That's why Tony and Lucas are like, oh my god, there's no towns around here. There actually was, but the GPS just came up with empty land. They didn't know they were driving straight through the reservation. Makes so much sense.
But anyway, the helicopter is just going on a wing and a prayer, well, a rotor and a prayer, I guess, to find where their people and their ETs are at.
Yeah, and O'Neill is like, oh my god, I found out what the symbol means. And they're like, okay, yeah, what is it? He's like, oh, it's a prophecy about how they gather to discuss the end of everything.
Bum, bum, bum. So meanwhile, on the ground, the helicopters have reached this gathering place. It is daytime again. And one of the aliens with a wrist gun is like, hey, fuck your helicopter, and blows it out of the sky.
Yes.
Bridger is dead.
But he's not. Because they actually transport the passengers of the helicopter to the ground. And they do not die tragically. And one of the aliens is leading Lucas to the... tube.
I love when Bridger, Keller, and Potato Man are beamed onto the ground, and like Ford and Brody are like, we are definitely not possessed or brainwashed. We are being super normal right now, Captain.
This is all fine.
is all cool.
It's all fine.
It's fine. These aliens are my best friends. Do not look at the tube. It's boring and not cool at all.
So then Scott, like, goes and looks at the tube and is like, it's the echo, Nathan.
Quote, it's reading Celsius above absolute zero. What? You need a number in there, or that is a meaningless phrase. What are you doing?
I love that the writers were just like, science, science, science.
An echo of what? Of what?
The snot burger. I don't know. It's like, they like, I don't know, pulled science words from a hat and we're just like, go.
When we are introduced.
It's like Mad Libs without like filling in the blanks.
When we are introduced to Commander Scott Keller, he has dedicated his entire life to providing inspiration, for building a foundation of inspiration for the generations to come to reach the stars. And what he found in that foundation is a fucked up space snail. And that is his life's work and legacy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a scientist. He's a science communicator. He's a leader of men. He's a leader of dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Scott Keller thinks magnets mean zero oxygen.
Maybe he's worried about being tried for treason of keeping, like, this stuff, you know, secret. And so he's like, if I act really dumb, they'll leave me alone. They'll think I cracked.
He's laying the groundwork for an insanity defense.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh no, he spent too much time in space. It broke him.
Nathan, it's this many degrees. And he starts holding out fingers.
Yes.
Like, what are you doing? What are you? You used to be an adult.
Then he somehow comes to the conclusion of like, oh man, maybe they aren't searching for new life, but they're starting over.
Okay.
I don't know how he got there, but sure.
With their parthenogenesis organs, I guess? I don't know.
So then...
It's like one of them just goes cross-eyed like, yeah, that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing.
So then Potato Man grabs one of the aliens and takes it hostage so he can get close to the tube and open it. And he finds out it's a casket for a mummified alien.
Yes, yes.
And he's horrified.
It's, you know what? It's not pretty in there. You know, it's shriveled and dried out like the alien corpse in such great patience.
You know what makes me think, though, that this is the same universe as Farscape? They have a sparkle blanket.
They do have a sparkle blanket.
It's a metallic blanket. I'm like, that's a Farscape thing.
Uh-huh.
That's why Scott is acting so dumb. He's trying to throw him off the train.
Well, the screeth hit him on the head really hard. Yeah. Really hard in between seasons.
And so then Bridger's like, wait, so this is why you came to bury your death, like leave your death here? And they're like, it's our hope for the future.
They're just saying things. They just say things.
So they've brought their dead there as a hope for the future and to show that self-destruction is the worst thing and that they are all that's left of their people. So they are hoping that by leaving the dead, it will serve as a sign and that they can also begin as they look for the beginning of life.
Mm-hmm.
It will allow them to re-engineer and rebuild from what's left of them.
In that briefing in the aquarium, when they were all on their bench together, the lead alien does say that the research they're doing is research into the beginning of life.
Yes.
So this had an aspect of this did have some foreshadowing, but also this is a very like mix of like hopeful pessimism, I guess, is the tone they're going for, that the fate of life is death, that in their experience, personal and I guess from other worlds they've observed, all intelligent life sows the seeds of its own destruction, and they, as the last refugee survivors in their big rectangle, are no exception to that law.
Mm-hmm.
But dang it, they're going to try again. And you know what's going to really do it this time? Lucas Walenchek, the specialist little boy, is invited to help them make, like, planet number two. Let's go again.
Yes. They're like, you give us hope, Lucas. Come with us and help us build new life. And Lucas looks at Bridger and is like, Captain, what do I do?
Like terraforming? Is he invited to do a terraforming project? Like, I would be asking for some details.
Well, and Bridger is like, oh man, I can't make this call for you, kiddo. And I'm like, what happened to you should talk to your parents?
He just did. That's his dad. It's his real dad.
It's because Lucas is now like 18, so he's like, fuck it, I don't care.
I am going to get a cool tattoo like Darwin, yeah.
Why doesn't Lucas have a tattoo yet? Like, come on, kid. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah, get the Mike Tyson. Do it.
That should have been an episode where Tony took him to get a tattoo.
Oh, yeah, you get some, like, real, like, Popeye shit. You get something that Crocker would have.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Like a anchor and... yeah. So, and then, like, Scott's like, oh, man, it's the dream of everyone. What you gonna do, kid? And Lucas... is eventually like, you know, I'm flattered, but like, this is my home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Maybe one day you'll come back for me, though.
And so they all leave one by one and into their beam zone.
Lucas does get a hug.
He gets a little goodbye
and I
cuddle.
I like to think
he gets a little cuddle.
It's from the one he's been eyeballing all along.
You can think it all you want, and I agree, but there's no way to tell. This is the same makeup on all these people.
Just kind of like a, hey, Lucas, I'll be waiting for you.
So they all beam up into their little box. But wait, you're thinking, you were calling this a very, very big box. Oh, you haven't seen a big box because the little box goes in a gigantic box in orbit.
Yeah, I kind of love that. I kind of love that it just like slits in like a Lego.
Yes, yes, yeah. That is cool.
The general is on the Sequest freaking out about the ship being gone and, like, that they need a fire on it. And O'Neill's like, what ship? The ship? There's no ship here anymore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it zaps away into the sky with, like, some voiceover of the alien as we, like, rewind time. That once we leave, you will understand how to go on. And then, like...
Yeah, it's some, like, natural psychedelia, right? It is sunsets going the opposite way. Waves coming off the beach and unbreaking. Just one bit of natural world B-roll after another going in reverse.
Yes. And we go back to when when Darwin is talking into the communication device.
It's a phone.
It's a phone.
Think of the dolphin a phone.
Yeah. And
he's got an arrest record, he can have a phone.
And so we cut to the bridge, and O'Neill's doing his whole, like, oh man, the ETA was 2 minutes ago, they're already here, and Bridger's like, where's Lucas? He should be here for this.
Ortiz is calling out hockey scores again.
But then all of a sudden they're like, wait, they're not here, it's gone. What was here is no longer here.
You ever visit someone and it goes so bad that you turn back time and just don't do it?
But then... we go to Lucas in his room with Darwin hanging out, and Piccolo comes in and is like, oh man, false alarm, good to be back. And Bridger pops in and is like, oh, welcome back. And Piccolo's like, yeah, cool, and leaves. And he's like, Lucas, where were you? You missed the aliens. Well, we missed them too, but like, you missed it.
Mm-hmm,
and he's
mm-hmm.
like, oh, yeah, I was doing stuff.
And it becomes clear as we read between the lines that Lucas does remember that time an alien went inside his body and piloted him around like a skin suit.
He's the only one.
He's the only one.
And Bridger's like, oh man, Darwin's like infection's gone. Wendy said that was going to take 48 hours. And Lucas is just like, weird. And he's like, wait, what's up? Because Lucas cannot lie to the captain. There's a reason he doesn't. There's a reason he's like, hey, Biff, I'm not lying to the captain.
Man.
But then he's like, oh, you know, Captain, give the general my condolences.
Mm-hmm,
and he's
mm-hmm.
like, huh? And then Ortiz pops on the radio and is like, oh, man, they lost.
Yeah.
And Bridger just stares Lucas down like, something's not right here, kid. What?
So he leaves, and Lucas, now I lays me down to sleeps, and he looks directly into the camera lens?
With a smirk?
Don't look at me like that.
It's so weird.
This is invasive. I don't like this.
So weird.
No, thank you. But that's not the end.
No.
Because we have to go back to the Seminole Reservation and see ancient silent grandpa looking up into the sky. Just so we don't forget that not only are we dealing with the new age cetacean transformations of dolphins, we got to get the new age alien contact mysticism of Native Americans, too.
Yeah. And we also have a little have
and,
to have.
And the neurodivergent, you know, we don't go back to Dagwood, but it was in the episode.
Well, we do get a little like sparkle that like,
oh God,
outlines the little squiggle shapes that Dagwood was drawing in the sky.
In the sky.
As the old man's looking up. Looks like fucking Tinkerbell up there.
Among the shrubs laid out in the same patterns that Bridger saw from up in the helicopter earlier. Yeah. Yeah. Like, the Native American thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the like, people with, you know, non-normative brain structures.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to, like, commune and converse with the aliens. X-Files did both those all the time.
Yes.
Especially Native Americans.
Yes.
All the time.
They really love that.
Did they do them both at the same time plus dolphins all in the same episode? No. No, they did not.
They spread it out. I'm not sure the X-Files ever did dolphins.
The X-Files never did dolphins. Yeah, I wonder if that's because, like, they came out in the week.
The same,
they
yeah.
were side by
they're
side.
They're like, we can't do dolphins. They're doing dolphins.
They're doing dolphins with aliens. Our aliens can't have dolphins.
We can do everything else but the dolphins. We can do sand. Oil. Alien oil.
Definitely. Oh, man. Krycek puking into that spiral. It's the best visual in all the X-Files.
Did you notice, though, okay, as much as I hate the weird, like, Lucas smirk into the camera thing.
Yeah?
Behind his head, on the pipe, it says mammal engineering. It's still mammal engineering. They made it mammal engineering for him. And that makes me so happy.
So, do you think this is, like, the same room, I guess, as his old room? But, like, in the renovation of the new Sequest? Like, if you were to put them side by side and, like,
like, point, in a floor plan?
Right. Would they be in the same spot? He's just got, like, 150 extra square feet and the ceiling's a lot higher.
I don't know. But I like to think that someone was like, gonna put this little decal here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's
nice. Yeah. Once Bridger was like, this is Lucas's room, like, yeah.
And so that is the end of the narrative content of the episode, mm-hmm. but there is season 2's replacement for Bob Facts.
It's now Fish Facts? Sea Facts?
It's Fish Facts. I like Fish Facts.
Even though it's not always a fish?
It's rarely a fish. In season 2, over the credits, they're like educational send-off. Is sending the cast members to SeaWorld Orlando to introduce an animal and talk about that animal to you.
Yes.
And for this inaugural example, it is the woman that plays Dr. Smith showing off orphan manatee calf Moose,
mm-hmm.
who is adorable.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about the necessary work of rescue for manatees as they are endangered, and all the, you know, the work that goes into it, how big Moose is going to get one of these days.
Yeah.
Manatee facts.
Yeah.
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 So, darling, do you have a fish fact?
Well, so I got curious about Moose. And
okay.
wanted to see if I could find out anything about him.
Okay.
And what I found at first I thought was him, but I don't think it can be.
Oh.
Which makes me wonder if the little calf in this fact
mm-hmm.
was not actually named Moose, but they named it after this moose.
Oh, okay.
So, like, if they just, like, we're going to call it Moose, even though its name is, like, Bingo or something. Okay. So this article from the Tampa Bay Times was published in June 1995.
Okay.
And it's about a manatee that was raised in captivity being the first released into the wild. So it was actually at SeaWorld.
Okay, this is lining up.
SeaWorld Orlando. So Moose was an orphaned calf that they had been raising for 3 years as of this point. So it was
in 1995.
And it was released in June. It was, again, the first from, like, SeaWorld to be released after that. And it was already, like, over 1,000 pounds when it was being released. Moose was apparently, like, the pioneer for Florida's efforts to reintroduce more than, like, 52 captive manatees back into the wild. And so, like, I am curious... Like, even though, I guess, in this article it talks about how SeaWorld has, like, 22 manatees that they were, like, rehabilitating at the time. Like, did they happen to have a calf named Moose, or did they say, hey, this is Moose the calf because of this Moose to, like, connect it in the news and, like...
I mean, I think that's the same Moose.
But it would have been... That was definitely, like, a baby, though.
Yeah.
The only thing, is what they showed on Sequest, it was a baby.
How far ahead of time did they film, you know? Yeah,
because if it was 1,000 pounds in June...
If it was 1,000 pounds in June...
June 1995.
Yeah.
That's why I'm like, it physically doesn't seem like it's the same one, but I feel like they're...
Can you put on, like, 800 pounds in a year? I guess you can if you're eating all the lettuce.
Yeah. So that, I don't know. I don't know there, but I thought that was fun. So it could be the same one, or it could be inspired by a little bit of, you know, we're going to change up some names there to make the connection.
I got a fish fact.
Yeah.
Have you heard that very, very recently, the first ever photographs were taken of humpback whales having sex?
No, I did not. I missed that one.
So
I thought you were going to tell me about, like, I don't know, the angler fish that was up by the surface.
Absolutely not. That thing can die and go to hell. So
it was so little. It was so cute.
Well, it can go to the small cute part of hell.
It was like 2 inches.
So in January 2022, just west of Maui, some professional photographers happened to catch a moment that no one in known photography had ever captured before. And these pictures were given to whale biologists and were recently published in a journal. And the thing is... This very first image of humpback whale sex is between two male whales.
Gay whale sex!
Gay whale sex is the first whale sex we've ever recorded through the medium of photography.
This makes me so happy.
Here's the gay whale sex.
Fuck yes.
Is the reason you don't want your coworkers to know about your podcast that this one is ending with us looking at gay sex?
And me being absolutely thrilled about it. I love this.
Let's zoom in. There you go.
Oh my.
There you go. There it is.
That is such a good picture.
There's
so high def.
There's whale penetration, baby.
I adore this. I am just thinking about all the awful people out there who are just like, well, whales are doing it. Like, fuck you. Look at these pictures of the whales having gay sex. Yes. Make a calendar of that. Good for them. I hope they're happy.
Well, one of them has an injured jaw, and they're trying to figure out, like, what does that mean for their behavior? How can we generalize? How do we learn from a... example of one, right? Like, it's not a large sample size to work with. But, you know, that's the business, right? Trying to come up with hypotheses and hopefully test them by sending a bunch of weirdo freaks off the coast of Maui with their cameras.
Why is that not more over the internet? Like, there should be... That should be plastered all over the place with, like, little rainbow flags. Like, come on. Everyone was obsessed with that anglerfish. Like, let's go. This is even better.
So, we've said goodbye to a number of cast members last time, but now we can add Bob Ballard of the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution to the list.
Yeah.
Good night, Bob.
And he would have loved this shit. He was getting weird with his Bob facts. I feel like he would have... ate up season two.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so I can just talk about anything. Like anything.
Great. I'm going to let my freak flag fly.
Hello, I'm Bob Ballard of the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. I enjoy grape nuts in the morning. They're not paying me to say so, but I just want you all to know, grape nuts. That's what I'm having.
I noticed grape nuts in the store the other week, and I was like, oh, they still make those. There was like a whole end cap for grape nuts, and they were on sale. I was like, is this how we know the economy's bad and like the world's ending? Is we're like, grape nuts. We're going to put this here instead of Doritos.
I'm Bob Ballard of the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. Susan, you should talk to your daughter. She misses you very much. We're having a great time, but you're supposed to be there every other weekend.
Don't get that personal, Bob.
But before we finish, darling, I have a simple question.
Yeah.
What did you think of this episode? What do you think of episode two of the second season, The Fear That Follows? I mean, the title is even meant to be a companion to Such Great Patience, yeah. Right? Such Great Patience and The Fear That Follows.
Yeah. I really think what you said earlier about it was supposed to be two episodes is absolutely true.
Like, I haven't read that. I've got no source. It's just a feeling that I have while watching it. It's just a guess.
It's so fast and we skip so fits. Much. I do think it's weird that this is essentially the second episode, right? Like, mm-hmm, I mean, mm-hmm. The first one's a two-parter. But, like, it's such a weird thing to tackle right away is, like, I mean, I guess it makes sense, like, hey, we're throwing it back to, like, season one with these aliens, but it also just seems like it should be farther in. Like, it doesn't seem like they should be dealing with this so quickly.
This seems like a sweeps week situation, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, halfway through second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
It's so weird. It's at the beginning.
But, like, to go with the rushedness of it, like, Lucas has an ending as if he had a journey.
Yeah.
He didn't, though.
No.
Ford and Potato Man being a pair seems like that's going to cause some friction as they're, like, you know, as he's meeting, like, his dark mirror. That doesn't really go anywhere or do anything.
Yeah.
The whole, like, the aliens' motivation being laid out in one very confusing, ineffective scene of exposition. It's all just sort of squeezed together and you're left going, okay, but what do you mean by that? Mm-hmm. Something that could have benefited by a double length, a two-part runtime, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just, it's an odd one. It's an odd one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's got moments. You know it's what? They've all got moments.
Yep. They all do. They all do. It's the ride. It's the ride of season two.
It's the ride in your bright lime green, awful, awful future car.
It's so bad. So you know what you should do, though?
Mm-hmm.
Our people at home, is you should leave us a rating and review for this.
You should leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, like our good friend and listener, Ginger Jin, who left a review titled Love at First Listen.
Mm.
I was obsessed with Sequest as a kid, and no one else has ever heard of or remembers this show.
Wrong. I do.
This podcast encapsulates my response to rewatching the show, and I have to say, I'm enjoying the podcast more than the show.
Yeah.
Sorry, not sorry. Thanks, guys, and keep up the great work.
You don't understand how much that means to me, that we can top Sequest.
I mean, we considered having me leave the podcast without explanation and you bring in someone else for season two.
Yeah, yeah.
High cast turnover. It's important to the nature of Sequest.
Yeah.
But thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you to everyone who does leave a rating and review, helping us get a little bit of algorithmic notice. But you know what is even more trustworthy and valuable in turbulent times like these?
Your voice.
Your voice. Tell a friend. Word of mouth. Share the show around. Share the links around. And just say why you enjoy listening to us. Because I know you enjoy listening to us.
Tell your friends it's where you heard about the gay whale sex.
Yes. Yes. And if
breaking news here.
And if you heard about it a few days ago when the article was actually published, you can lie.
It's okay.
You can say we are where you heard about the gay whale sex.
Yeah. It's where I heard about it, so it could join the party. You can also follow us on social media, and we are on Blue Sky.
Yes.
Whiskers.
WSKRS, that is us. Another place you can find the two of us is on the current most recent episode of Bizarre Podcast, Space Puppets, available at patreon.com/chipandironicus for at least $1 a month. It is the best value for a dollar you're going to find in the entire landscape of entertainment in any medium, I tell you what.
Yeah, yeah.
We had you on... Yes. As a guest to talk about the fourth season of Farscape as a whole, as a complete entity.
Yeah.
You also gave your thoughts on the Peacekeeper Wars miniseries.
I did.
Which I am about to talk about at length, and I do mean length, with my regular co-host for that program, as we reach the very end of that show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a good time. We should check it out.
You can listen to Elena say things like, quote, how did they not all have mono? Or, quote, Gigi Edgley is a little fae creature.
She is. She totally is. There were so many bodily fluids. Nasty, nasty little man.
Weirdo Wayne.
Weirdo.
That's another one of your coinages. Weirdo Wayne.
I'm glad you're quoting me in such ways. When I die,
yeah.
If I go before you, you should like create a wall of memorial to me that's just like quotes like that.
Gigi Edgley was a fey little creature.
Yeah, yeah. Whale sex, like.
Excuse me, gay whale sex.
It's very important. Expect that one to be in sparkle fonts, like little hearts.
But that's all we have for you today. We will be back next time as we continue on the brand new uncharted waters of the second season of Sequest DSV. But until then,
I'm Lena.
I'm Grant. And in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger, as we recall them,
for beneath the surface lies the future. Aliens.